Hello, and welcome to Manga Explaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who haven't read much manga before. Hosted by Deb Aoki, Christopher Butcher, Chip Zdarsky, and myself, David Brothers. Follow along with our show notes and reading list at mangaexplaining.com. And we have a very special episode of Manga Explaining, even more special than all the others we've done that have been really special. Because Christopher and Chip are in Canada, I'm in Oakland, California, and Deb is in Hawaii, along with a couple of birds, I think. One or two?
Yeah, I think they're parakeets. My mom, my brother's parakeets.
Awesome. Well, hopefully they like manga because they're about to get an earful.
Couldn't you have just pretended that you were outside?
No.
In the tropics?
In the tropics. Well, I'm just glad the chickens aren't acting up right now.
Yeah. But we're recording this before the holiday season, and we chose a very festive book, Go Nagai's Devilman, the Classic Collection, Volume 1. Which is a very, there's no way I could do this straight faced. It's a story of a kid who becomes part demon to fight other demons, along with his apparently murderous best friend, who he trusts implicitly.
Best friend.
We don't know why.
Best friend.
Yeah.
There is a drawing of them naked in an embrace two or three four times.
Yes.
But it's from 1972. It ran in the Weekly Shonen Magazine for 5 volumes, roughly a year, and it sold 50 million copies worldwide. It's another thing like Gundam where it spawned like a little, not a full-on culture around it, but like there's like a good little core of creeps that love this stuff. There's other movies, there's other manga, novels, films. There's a truly bad live-action version of this on Tubi right now if you have that app.
Live action?
Yes.
How do they do that?
Not very well.
With really bad CGI? Yeah,
I think it's from like 2006 or something. It's...
Sorry, David, you would get this reference. Is it as good as the original live action Guyver movies, or is it better or worse?
It's way worse.
Oh, okay.
Well, Guyver was fun.
Seek it out then. Guyver's my line.
Yeah, no. Guyver at least had like good costume design. But
it really did.
Part of the reason why this blew up is that Go Nagai is one of those guys who somehow managed to create like a bunch of different iconic things in Japan. There's this, which is very like edgy horror. There's Mazinger Z, which is one of the, he's the one who created the super robots, which are kind of the predecessor to the real robots from Gundam. And he was also the guy who was like, oh, someone should ride in the robot. So let's give this robot a cockpit. So like, he's just trailblazing all over the place. He invented Cutie Honey, which is sort of a teen girl action hero, sexy and action packed sort of a thing, but popular with a bunch of different kids and various 45-year-old men. But Devilman is why we're here. Devilman is one of those where I heard about it a lot as a kid, and it was almost mythic, you know? Like, you couldn't see it, so it just took on all these strange proportions where it was much edgier than you could have imagined. There's all kinds of nudity and sex and violence, and if your mom caught you with it, you'd be in so much trouble. So luckily, you know, I'm in my 30s now, and it's in a nice hardcover. And I can make my three friends on Manga Explaining read it along with me. Because this is actually my first time through the series. I've seen Devilman Crybaby on Netflix, which is kind of the gold standard adaptation of this work. And also probably of manga to animation more generally. But this is like the raw, uncut, original material meant for mostly teenage boys in the 70s with all that entails. So... we'll get to how I feel about it. I want to start with Deb. Deb, how did Devilman strike you?
Oh my God. I knew what I was in for.
Yeah.
Devilman has been for a long time one of those classic manga series that has been like the white whale, like something that for some reason or another just escaped being licensed. Despite being kind of legendary, right?
Yeah.
And legendary for its violence, legendary for its over-the-top craziness. So, but this is the first time you're able to read. I mean, there was a couple of issues published, I think, in 1995 by Glenn Danzig.
Erotic.
Of the Misfits. He had his own gothic action comics. And then so he licensed a couple Devilman stories and colored them very, very badly.
Yeah.
So that was for years. That was all we saw of Devilman. So to now get the whole series and get to see it is kind of like, wow. Okay, now I get it.
Yeah,
this is nuts. It's kind of like going in this parallel universe where, like, what if America never had the Comics Code Authority?
Right? Yeah.
it's just balls to the wall crazy. Like, he's just making this shit up as he goes along. Mm-hmm. This is like fan service on a platter.
Mm.
boobs, blood, dismemberment. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm glad we have it in English, but it is something else.
Did you enjoy reading it?
I found it uncomfortable to read. Not because of the violence, mm-hmm. but because it just was kind of disjointed.
Mm.
Like, it was hard to follow the story. It was hard to follow where he was taking it.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like he was making things up as he was going along, which he, as we hear it, he was.
Yeah.
So no secret there, but you know, he's basically like a hero, right? He has an origin.
Mm-hmm.
He goes from being this sweet, timid guy into like this guy who's got this bad boy side, right? But the characters are kind of all over the place. Maki, his so-called love interest, is kind of unlikable. I mean, and then.
But those boobs.
So I guess I appreciate it on the level, like, what Devilman created as a foundation, many, many, many flowers sprouted from this fertile pile of something.
I was thinking you don't get Parasite without Devilman in a lot of ways.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of really like body horror. There is like the demons. There is the historical stuff. It's just, I wish there was some kind of essay here to give it context. Because you're just kind of like, you know, with the Motohagyo book, right? You were given context for her work. You were given context for her career. With this, it's like, hello, open the page. Wham, boobs, splattering, blood, dismemberment. And then you're at the end going like, what just happened?
I feel like any essay that did that would be such an amazing act of BS. Like, BSing a whole criticism, it would become art unto itself.
I mean, it's just trash cinema. It's just crazy.
Yeah. I just saw Christopher realize something while you were talking, so now I want to get his take.
Oh.
So, just for the readers at home, the listeners at home, when David said, without this, there wouldn't have been a Parasite, maybe... He didn't mean the Korean film that won the Academy Award, which is where I immediately went. And I was like,
I was trying to piece that together too.
You want to talk about an insane act of critical BS. I think that would have been like, no, David, connect those two. Actually, I would love to hear that. I would love to hear you do that.
Oh,
he means the manga series Parasite, which is currently in print, I think, in omnibus volumes from Kodansha. So yeah, that was my grand realization. I was like, oh, he means the manga. Oh, thank God.
I am actually crying now.
That's such a funny idea.
You just gave a very specific impression of this manga that it does not live up to for fans of
whoever Korea. Turned off the podcast after like 7 minutes and 30 seconds is screwed when they go pick this up.
Oh man. This is the work of how carefully do I choose my words here? This is as if Unrestrained Id wrote a comic. It is literally just like there's nothing. There's like no thoughts here. There's like a bunch of dude had a sketchbook of cool drawings and was like, all right, go, and started drawing from like page one, panel one, with including the sequence in the middle of the chase scene at the beginning where it's like, oh, we've entered this metal tunnel. Oh no, we've hit a dead end. And the next panel is literally like, oh, just kidding. Here's a trap door. And you're just like, he just didn't know where to go from where you hit a dead end. He just invented a trap door. Didn't go back and erase that page because that panel was drawn. This is no Tezuka. This is no, I drew three pages and they don't work and I'm throwing them away. This is make it work on the page and keep going. Yeah. And that is just the whole thing. That is just the whole thing. Make it work on the page and keep going. My opinion of this book is from page 54 to page 125, it is one sustained conversation.
Oh.
One run-on conversation between two characters that like culminates in the introduction of Devilman, and like stuff's happening while they're having one sustained breakneck conversation. And this is not a light conversation. It's about the end of the world and demons and gods and like the nature of mankind, and everything is shit, but it still needs to be saved, and we're going to become demons, but first we're going to kill some hippies. Like, it just keeps going and going and going, and you're like, this is, there's no structure. There's, this is not a structured narrative. It's a narrative. And
is this the original webcomic? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, this is the original webcomic. This is just,
here's an installment. Here's an installment.
There's no planning. Oh shit, this is literally due in an hour. I gotta knock 8 pages out. Like, let's see where we end up this week.
And let's just do a full page drawing of Devilman looking pissed off.
Yeah.
Because that makes one page down.
It's such a good drawing too.
I'm convinced those were chapter breaks, by the way, every time that happens in that style.
I want to talk about this object that has been published separate from the contents of this object. I don't like this, but I am glad it exists. I laughed out loud. I cringed. I actually said, what the fuck, more than one time. Like, oh my God. Like, genuine shock at a thing that happened in a comic book is like very rare. But when, spoilers, the turtle demon has the little girl's face on his back and Devilman has to punch directly through her screaming face to like hit the inside of the turtle man and kill him before then ripping the shell off of the turtle man. I was just like, what is going on? Like, this is crazy. And then you're thinking, this, where do you even go from here? And the answer is literally Hitler. The answer is literally Hitler.
But you're underselling the turtle thing, because he closes the girl's eyes after he punches like through the turtle shell.
He's got three fingers, like three giant.
That's the man part of Devilman.
Yeah.
Through the face of the girl and like collapsed her face and into the like, and has like killed the turtle man, and then uses the last remaining finger that is not inside the turtle man to gently close her eye because she's extra dead now. She was already dead. That she kept screaming, I'm already dead, kill me, I'm already dead, kill, like over and over, like I can't. This is the most itself thing we've read, full on.
Yeah,
you could write like pages of critical bullshit about it. You could write like essays into why every vagina has like scary teeth mouth on every demon lady, and like what you're trying to say about going, and the even the boobs like bite back. Like, it is, there's so much on the page that even I don't know that he knew what he was putting down. Like, it, this is like this is like the comic that tells on itself, first off. Like we're, sorry, no, I think we're 5 things in there.
That's an amazing way to put it.
But you know what's really amazing is he did this at the same time as Mazinger.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he was creating both things at the same time.
Is that as disjointed?
It's more commercial.
Okay. Mm. That makes sense.
I mean, it's kind of like Kamen Rider, which we're going to read coming up, which was basically, it came out the same time as the anime came out.
Yeah.
So it was like he's writing, you know, like, he's writing to keep up with the demands of this series that the animation company wanted to do. So that's why there's kind of this, I'm just throwing shit out there and see if it sticks.
Okay.
Oh man, I love picturing that this guy was also doing more commercial work, whereas this was like a passion project.
Nope. Also commercial, but for a very different, like, I don't know why they would let him get away. Anyway, long story short,
we'll get to that. I don't think I like it.
I don't think I like it, and I don't think it's good, but I think it is. I respect it a hell of a lot, actually. I actually really think that, like, man, you saw something that you wanted to do and you went for it, and parts of it are executed at an insanely high degree. Like, there's some real time. It's kind of how I feel. Oh, if I'd read this earlier, I would have a very different opinion of it, but it's kind of how I feel about Rob Liefeld's work. It's like the most Rob Liefeld manga I think we've read. Where it's just like, this dude loves the things he draws, and he can draw incredible, powerful shit. But he has an idea and he just goes for it on the page. And it doesn't matter if it makes sense in context. It doesn't matter if it makes sense with the previous issue. It doesn't matter where he ends the issue on, because he's just going to go in a different direction in the end. And he may or may not finish it ever. And it's like, it feels like Lee Field, especially when you get into like just how awesome some of the drawings are. Like the fact that Devilman is drawn exclusively with brush work and like dry brush, whereas the rest of the comic is drawn as like traditional illustration with like pens and things like that. He's just doing some great stuff. So yeah, man, I really respect this, but like, and I don't want to read the, I don't want to read the next one. Like, I just like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it's about or what happens. Like, because it clearly didn't matter to him at the time. And it's just like, it's entertainment. It's pop. It's very pop. So that's what I think about this, but I have so much to say about it too.
Chip, you're having a good time over there. What did you think about Devilman?
No, I'm enjoying the takes. There are some really good drawings in this, and there are some of the worst drawings in this. And it kept making me think about, like, sometimes when you look at really old paintings, you're like, how could they screw up the human body like this? Like, it seems like you could figure that out, or perspective or things like that.
Yeah.
And this kind of feels like that. Like, it's like early stages in like a type of manga or like a type of cartooning, and they're just figuring things out, because like a lot of the human bodies and the perspective stuff is real bad. Like, I'm looking at page 168 right now, which is a splash page for some reason of the buddy Ryo just pointing at us. And it is so poorly drawn. It's stunning. But then there's some, especially later on, there's some really beautiful Devilman stuff, like you were saying. And once he gets into time travel, there's a lot more focus there, weirdly enough.
For folks keeping track at home, once he gets into time travel is something you can also say about this book. And that's why Hitler's in it. But go on.
Roughly 450 pages in, they add time travel.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing's absolutely nonsensical. I do like that it opened basically with the Charles Atlas origin.
Yeah.
But instead of, you know, signing up for Charles Atlas, he becomes a devil man.
Yeah.
There's something super funny about the change of his expression after that point.
Because he grows eyebrows, and they're so intense.
They're so intense, he uses the eyebrows to fight things. Yeah. Like, I almost died seeing that. Like, okay, like, I get, like, you don't want to keep reading this, but there is a part of me that kind of wants to keep reading to see what else could possibly happen. Because it is so bonkers. I will say the buddy, Ryo, was very distracting because he looks just like a John Allison drawing.
Oh, he does, actually. Wow.
So it's like someone just dropped a John Allison character into the middle of this manga.
That is so good.
There are parts I really, really enjoyed. Like, even that Charles Atlas beginning, the bullies were just like so fun. Like, that was just like fun cartooning of these outlandish characters. The hippie sequence was, it made me laugh. The fact that, you know, this is the terrors that we're going to see behind this door, and it's a bunch of hippies.
Yeah.
And then their massacre is also extremely funny. Like, there's a lot of really funny stuff, some intentional, some not intentional. But I will say, this book has maybe my favorite page from anything that we've covered. And it is the final page of the Hitler story. Because first of all, we know the whole time that it's Hitler. It's crazy that he thinks that we don't know that.
It was so obvious that I thought maybe, like, it's not Hitler. Like,
yeah.
No, it was Hitler.
But it's just like that whole page of just like, oh my God. Where all of a sudden, for some reason, all of this happening is what made Hitler Hitler. And then he's walking away and the guy's like, what the hell? Adolf. And then it gives us a very detailed drawing of Adolf Hitler as we know him. And then they add a panel that says, where are you going? Adolf. Adolf Hitler. That's the end. That's the end. It's one of the most bonkers thing I've ever seen in comics. And it is maybe my favorite thing that's happened on this podcast. But it's funny, like the Joan of Arc chapter is beautiful. Like that chapter is actually like really elegantly drawn and thought out and not gross, really.
True.
Like the way everything else is. It's almost like he was like, you know what? I'm going to slow down for this one. And this is going to be my romance story. Like it feels very out of place, but it's actually quite lovely. A shout out to the color, which is horrible. I'll always do that.
I thought it was very traditional, like basic colors. Like the opening, the Great War of Legends sequence, I thought was muddy, but had interesting color choices.
They're interesting. They are interesting.
No, I love that. I love the color in this. I think you're wrong, dude. I think
Well, it's not just the color. It's the rendering style of it, too. Like, I just can't handle this airbrush wishy-washy.
You know what this reminds me of? You remember back, maybe I'm too old, but remember back in the day when if you had a hot van, you had someone airbrush some art on it?
Yeah.
And then that would be your, like, makeup machine?
Yeah, this is the height of that art. It's so good.
Right.
Like, it looks like heavy metal album covers.
That's right.
Yeah, like, that's so appropriate.
There's a lot of work put into it. I just don't think the end result is worthy of the amount of work put into it. But I will always feel that way.
I think I agree with all three of you in different ways, where, like, I'm really impressed by this book, but I don't think I'll read volume 2.
Yeah.
Oh, but you should.
Jumps the shark so hard right before the Hitler story.
Before the Hitler story. Jump the shark? Sorry.
As soon as time travel starts.
That's when you think it jumps the shark.
Like the Joan of Arc thing. Wait, oh, Deb, what were you going to say? Then I'll give my take.
No, I was going to say, like, since you guys have no intention of getting volume 2, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It is so obvious how Ryo has the hots for Akira. And all this entire story is about Ryo wanting Akira.
All right.
Really?
Yeah, at the end, there's a part where he's like, oh, I was actually female, but I'm kind of like I really love you and stuff like that. So it's like, okay, so you basically went on this convoluted journey to destroy the world because you were a guy who was a girl who was in love with him, and maybe you could have just gone out for coffee or drinks.
That'd be a very short manga. Yeah.
There's so much there now that it's just like, oh my God, that's like another paper you could write about this insanity.
I mean, it has the classic boys love stuff, right? There's the dark haired boy and the light haired boy.
They're embracing constantly.
I call them the salt and pepper shaker formula of boys love.
Yeah.
Because you got to tell which guy's on top and which guy's on bottom.
Mm.
And David pointed out earlier, but like, There's one really beautiful shot of them nude falling together.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that level of embrace, I was just like, oh, okay. All right. I get it now.
It's like, oh, finally some subtext, you know?
Because Maki ain't got a chance.
No.
Like, it's so seat of your pants that I feel like the story ran out as soon as the turtle guy was done with.
Mm.
Like, for all the... like the pacing, and I mean, it's clearly like aimed at young boys. There's going to be certain things I'm just not going to jive with because I'm, you know, too old for it. But once they got past the turtle, it was like, okay, now what? It's like time travel and like greatest hits, like Rose of Versailles type stuff, Joan of Arc. Like, it's such a playing to the crowd type of moment, I feel.
And it happened so abruptly.
Yeah.
Because it's like the turtle, and then the next thing you got is this color thing where, oh, we're going to travel through time. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Is it really playing to the crowd? Because I feel like he would lose most of his audience by doing this. Like,
what's weird is Japan the young loves boy Marie who Antoinette. Wants...
Okay, all right. It's so like a rock star.
Yeah, it's like a whole thing. I have a Lupin the Third movie.
Yeah.
Or it's a stage play where for some reason he gets zapped back to Marie Antoinette times. And it's like amazing. It's Sakurazuka, actually. It's really awesome.
And are they also big fans of Adolf Hitler?
I don't think so, but that's like shocking enough to where you're like, oh, this is going places. Like, this is another kind of edgy.
It's interesting because it feels more like he wanted some sort of structure for individual stories, and the time travel is just like, okay, that's how we'll do it. Because if I was a young boy reading this, I wanted boobs and I wanted demon violence. That's all I cared about. And then all of a sudden, I'm with Joan of Arc, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Those chapters spoke more to me. Yeah.
Is that attempt to give it some historical content so it seemed more virtuous?
I think
maybe,
so.
Maybe, yeah.
Because a few pages before it just falls right off a cliff for me is when they're like this is all a metaphor for nuclear war. All of a sudden, which I can see looking back, but it isn't really supported very well in the text. It's almost like he hit a point where his editor was like, okay, we did all the stuff you said you wanted to do. Now you've got to give us the story.
Yeah. Oh, was that the nuclear war thing? Was that weird smug dude in class?
Yeah.
Was it the teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy, the cartooning of that guy was amazing.
So much of the cartooning is so good. Like the goons you mentioned, the bullies, like those guys are straight out of like central casting. Like you see those guys in multiple like different types of manga. I think they're all like homaging the same, you know, like real life type or the same type from some movie.
It's so weird. If you look at pages 448 through to 451 with that guy who feels like he's the teacher, his face changes almost completely in every panel he's in to like a different. There is no consistency to how that guy's done. Look at the top of 450 and the bottom of 450. Like what happened to his chin?
His nose changes place.
His nose changes. It's like, it's such a fun, like, style of character.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the cartooning of, who was the guy that did the cartoons for, was it suck.com? Back when that was a thing?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, man. I'll have to look it up for the show notes or something.
Yeah.
But it feels like a distinct cartooning style on its own. Similar to the bullies at the beginning of this. Mm-hmm. So many characters that pop up just, again, just like that John Allison drawing. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's not a consistency, but he's trying something really interesting with each character. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they didn't understand at that point in time to have consistency between characters, too. Like so they all feel like they're part of the same world. He's just like, all right, this character looks like this. Like, what?
The approach to monster design is like that as well. It reminds me of the Eternals, Jack Kirby's Eternals, more than anything.
Yeah.
Where he's like, all the deviants look different. We're just going to design, you know, 1,000 monsters every issue. And in this, they're all combinations of things, you know, like tree and boobs, or her ears are wings, and then also her boobs have teeth. It's really consistent when it comes, like, is it body horror?
Yes.
Yeah?
Because women will eat you up.
Chip did that with Captara, by the way. Which I thought was really funny. He's like, Kagan, I need you to draw 75 different new He-Man villains on the last double page spread of this issue. And he broke Kagan for 3 years. And now we're getting Captara 2 now that he's back.
That's not what broke him. There was plenty of other stuff to break him.
But I want to read one bit from Wikipedia about Devilman that I think explains a lot about it. It says, the series was originally ordered by Toei Animation as a toned-down anime version of Nagai's previous series, Demon Lord Dante. However, Nagai wrote a darker-toned manga in order to alert readers to the dangers of the wars based on how dark the narrative becomes with each of Akira's challenges. Hmm. So it's almost like...
This was commissioned to be lighter than his previous work?
Yeah, and it went in the complete opposite direction. Oh. And there's something I love about that. I think that's partly why it's so messy, is that there's like a push and pull between like the editor trying to keep it on a track and the guy just kind of doing his thing. But it, like, the monster design is so cool to me. Like, Cyrene and the turtle guy, whose name I've always forgotten ever since I was a kid. They're two of my favorite designs, like, for monsters, period. I think the faces in the shell are really evocative.
Oh, yeah. That's really cool.
I was going to say that those faces in the shell, didn't we say that in Dandadan with the crab?
Oh, yeah. I think that's why I decided to choose Devilman. I was like, oh, yeah, right. Is that a reference to something, do you think? Is it like a folklore thing?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. I feel like I've seen this type of thing before in Japanese horror. I just don't know where it originated.
Gotcha. It's really creepy. And this is another sequence, I think, that was one of my favorites in terms of storytelling, because it's another, like, I don't know, 15-page conversation, mostly on black backgrounds. But the floating heads and kind of the context of it make it really effectively creepy, you know? Like, you couldn't do this all the time. It's sort of like John Byrne drawing, you know, like a snowstorm in Alpha Flight or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you can do it once, but it really works here in a way that I think the conversation that Chris mentioned between Ryo and Akira doesn't. Because it's just 100 pages of screen tone backgrounds and talking.
Yeah.
But there's something incredible about the fact that, like, it takes 200 pages for Devilman to show up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Stan Lee thing happening here, where he's explaining but not showing. You know, like he probably could have explained the premise behind the book, but he basically spent the first 15 pages of just impressionistic demons ripping apart other demons with no words. And then so because he spent all that time with demons flying through the air and like merging with each other and not explaining what it is, that when you finally get to Akira and Ryo talking, it is just nonstop explaining. Like, in a way, it's just kind of like, this is what you just saw.
And I'll tell you, it did not take Stan Lee 200 pages to have Spider-Man show up. Say what you will about Stan Lee.
Christopher, what was your favorite part of the book? Like, what did you enjoy the most as you were going through?
This is not...
Whether it was like a...
This is a bad answer. This is a bad answer.
Yeah.
Because it's such a me answer, unfortunately. But
oh, no, I'm ready for it.
I was trying to pick it apart. I was trying to figure out what this book was. Because this is not... I could tell right away, this is not how Devilman was introduced or published in Japan, at least, especially initially. So this book starts off with a color sequence that sort of shows like the time of demons and then like angels coming down. And it's like, it's almost exactly like the sequence where Kenny goes to both heaven and then hell in South Park, bigger, longer and uncut. Like you're in a South Park episode for a bit. And then all of a sudden it's like a state of the art CG 3D nonsense, heaven, hell, demons, fire, things exploding, all that kind of stuff. And then boom, you're back to a regular South Park episode. That's what this starts with, is like the CG fully painted heavy metal album cover version of Devilman. And then it, you know, goes to 70s, you know, manga. And I was like, there's no way. There's no way. And so I actually did something that I'm not proud of, but I think it's germane to the conversation. I went and looked at the scans for Devilman, which are online, unfortunately. Do not go look for them. Support your local manga. And this is a that whole section was not in Devilman Volume 1. That came much later. It came in like a new edition or something like that. But yeah, Devilman Volume 1 starts with, you know, the black and white pages in this volume. And then after the turtle story, where it goes straight to time travel, those are later stories. As far as I can tell, that might be Shin Devilman or Devilman 2 or Devilman Neo or like a spinoff or something that was retroactively inserted at that point, because I think what happens is he realized he wrote himself into a corner and kind of got to the end game. Like, the demons are like, they cut off that kid's head. They're taking over human bodies and people can't tell the difference. There's turtle monsters and they're abducting whole trains of people. Like, things really ramp up there. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're slipping through time for a while. And it's like, they maybe had to put the brakes on and insert these other stories to kind of pad out like what was going to be the end of the series. Cause that's, you know, it does kind of end at volume 5 in Japan. And we got to about halfway through volume 3, a little bit longer actually. And then we got all these other weird stories. And so what we're reading is like massive time jumps and when the creator is doing the work as well, which is why like the Marie Antoinette story is so much better drawn than the other.
Yeah. That makes sense now.
Way later. Mm. I feel like this is the thing. This is the only thing that makes me want to go to volume 2 now, is like, do they just go back to like the 1972 manga starting with volume 2 and it's just like black and white and weird again before they like...
That would like, be hilarious.
He's done so many side stories after the fact as well that like illuminate different parts of the mythology, according to Wikipedia, that are like not in the scanlations. Like, this edition has a whole bunch of stuff that's not in the scans, and that is honestly, the translation on this is way better. I mean, shout out to the two translators. I think
this reads really smoothly, considering how much nonsense.
And even a little contemporarily, which I could see pissing people off, but you know, who cares? Zach Davidson and Adrian Beck, this reads really, really well, and the scans do not read as well. Be nice. This is maybe what would be called in Japan like a perfect collection or a perfect edition, where all of the Devilman stories that Go Nagai had ever written are sort of reworked and reinserted and shuffled into different places and things like that to create this work. And I think it's fascinating, B, makes for probably a stronger book. Like, if it had been, all right, here's the original 5 volumes in order, and then here's the like 300 pages of bonus material he had did afterwards, and you just read it all like that, chronologically when it was released versus chronologically when it happens in the story, I don't think it would be as good. I think that this is probably the best presentation of this material you could hope for. But it is confusing because it's kind of all over the place. Like the first half of the book, sure, it's the first half of Devilman with a little thing at the beginning. But after that, like, yeah, it's all over the place. And kudos, like, it's color. Three quarters of the way through the book, like Seven Seas printed it in color. Good job, Seven Seas. Like, I am very happy that those color pages made it and it wasn't just a muddy black and white mess. I feel like I appreciate it more that they tried to tell the cohesive story of Devilman. And I think if we get to when Rose of Versailles from Udon comes back into print, Deb and I have been wanting to do it forever, but it hasn't been in print. And that's also based on, like, I think the most recent collection in Japan, which does things like reshuffle the stories and puts them in order and of when they happened and like takes old side stories that, you know, we find things out years later and inserts them chronologically, that kind of thing. Yeah. Like the most interesting thing for me was trying to figure out what this book is. And it might just be, this is the collection of the most recent Japanese edition, but I feel like it's even something extra. And so I really wish, going back to what Deb said, there was just some kind of essay or context or something just on like a how did this happen kind of a way. Like, I don't need you don't have to explain that Go Nagai was making all the vaginas giant bitey mouths because it was a commentary on the war. Like, we know that's BS. Like, we know that that's not real. Like, things he's working out in comics, and that's one of the great things about comics is the immediacy and then the regret years later. Yeah, straight up. Like, I would have liked to have known what this was, and it's nowhere in this, and it's...
There is like, but I mean, I don't think if this was like published in order, it would make any more sense.
I think it would be more of a
like we've read a book like this before.
Which one?
Like Oshimbo was also like pieces out of order.
And you really commented on how weird it was that like all of a sudden people were having kids and then they were or weren't together and whatever. And we had to explain it in the episode. And you were like, oh, okay, that's weird. That makes sense now. But it's exactly like that with this. And it's like, yeah. If you're going to do that and put them out of order, write a little note at the beginning saying we're writing out of the order, which is Oishinbo did actually. But I get into manga because, especially stuff like this, especially classic manga, which is kind of what we're doing right now, because there's been 70 years of manga publishing in Japan and we've gotten like tiny slivers. Like, we've gotten like fractions of a percentage of that in English, right? So if you're going to bring that stuff back, talk about it. Like, this isn't, no one's going to pick this up and go, oh yeah, this is just as good as Jujutsu Kaisen. Like, no, this is a weird ass thing. And it's like, that's great. I'm glad that there's a weird ass thing like this in print, but like, just tell people what's going on, or at least contextualize it, or at least like something, because otherwise it's just like, why does the art suddenly get like literally 15 years of skill better from page to page? And then when you start volume two, it's going to go back 15 years again. All this weird stuff I find really, as a reader who likes classic comics, it really put me off in a way, and it made me want to dig in, and it made me want to find, well, it made me seek the dark corners of the internet. And, you know, I'm not blaming anybody for that, especially Seven Seas, but like, I would have liked to have said, this story appeared here originally. That's all we needed. We needed one page. Sure, this book is 700 pages.
It's not like you had to do a murder to get this information.
This does not put me off of this at all. And
but the, you don't, does it put you on it? Do you hear you like, this is the best presentation of this material?
I mean, it probably is, because I kind of don't want the other stuff. like I'd rather have those beautiful time travel stories in the back, because it has my favorite Adolf Hitler page ever, than whatever actually happened next, because this isn't Devilman the complete collection. You know, it's Devilman the classic collection one. That's, and classic collection does not indicate that this is the complete thing.
Yeah.
It does for me. So I feel you. I think we have a difference of opinion there. But like, again,
I think this is maybe the most nerdy I've ever seen you. isn't actually the complete Devilman, and this book I don't like. I need it to be complete.
I do need it to be complete.
There's a wiki about this and explaining the different editions.
Oh, there is?
There's been at least three different editions of Devilman. There's the original edition, which is what was published in Weekly Shonen in five volumes from 1972. Mm. And let's see. And then there are three volume editions published in 1983. And then there is the deluxe edition, which was, or refurbished edition, include colored pages.
Yeah, it adds
published in five volumes in 1997. Then it explains what the different changes was. adds The Great War of the Gods, the 32-page prelude to Volume 1, divides the story into chapters. Yeah, it goes pretty deep into what the changes are. And then there's the revised edition in 2012.
Jeez.
The changes are more like touch-ups and stuff like that. But I think what you're seeing is the deluxe edition, which explains exactly what Chris is describing. Things got inserted. Things were not as they were originally serialized. It's interesting.
Also, I'd like to say, for the record, I am this nerdy every week. I just keep it in the show notes where it belongs. Like, I write 2,000 extra words about every manga we read every single week. This is not new.
Like, we just read a book called Gundam, The Origins Activation 1, which was a book that was drawn by the original creator of the anime, but in the 2000s, based on the stuff from before, but that doesn't relate to the other stuff. Like,
yeah, I'm going to make David write the show notes for that one. I don't care about it.
I am so entertained right now, I forgot to host. Deb, did you see Devilman Crybaby?
I did.
Okay.
And I saw it before I read this.
Did you like it?
Yes, I liked it a lot. Although I will say that I don't feel the need to watch it again.
Oh, okay. That's where we differ.
It is a journey.
Yeah.
And it is intense and sad. I mean, it's really interesting to have watched that, and then you see the bones of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You see, like, and in Masaaki Yuasa's version, he really does play up some aspects of the story that the original doesn't. You know, Akira's transformation, his relationship with Maki, who is less annoying in the anime, more plausibly a love interest than in the anime. Someone you really feel genuinely sad when her head gets cut off and she dies.
Spoilers.
That's why you have to pick Volume 2, man. But, you know, it's like, so he basically took the bones of the story, but made it fill it out. Like, there was that part where Sareen combines with another demon who's actually been in love with her. And so he sacrifices himself so she can continue to live. That gets very short shrift in the manga. It's much more fleshed out in the anime. So I think they complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like the hippie orgy thing. Dance party is now a warehouse rave, and it's this fabulous excuse for Masaaki Yuasa to do like this psychedelic,
it's like a hallucinogenic orgy.
Yeah, it just gets kind of crazy and impressionistic, kind of like, you know, those certain arty movies of the late 60s.
Yeah, like a James Bond
with the gels on it and stuff. Yeah,
murder rave just makes me think of Blade.
Yeah, same.
It's honestly, when I was rewatching the first episode today, and I was like, oh, this Devilman originally came out before Blade, and Devilman Crybaby came out after. You can tell by the club scene.
Oh, wow. There you go.
But I was curious what Deb thought of Crybaby, because I think that, like, I loved Crybaby. I've seen it a couple times now. And the main difference between this and that is that Crybaby has characters, and this just kind of has, like, named entities, you know?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like, you care about what happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
You do feel a little sad that, you know, Akira, who's a genuinely good person, but shy and timid, becomes something else. And whether that was a good change or not is, you know, something to feel a little sad about.
Yeah.
You know, there's much more depth, and he explores the connections and why this is ultimately a tragic story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we've been talking, like, anxiety makes you not want to watch a narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
My thing is, I don't like downer stories. They make me sad.
Yeah, it's fair.
We've done a few of those.
Yeah, right. It's hard enough, but I hear you.
Crybaby's in a similar genre of story as, like, Pluto, and there's something I'm blanking on, where it takes, like, an old classic and kind of updates it for adults.
Yeah.
Sort of like, actually, more extreme than Batman Year One, I would say. Year One is kind of like it's this much of a gap, but Pluto to Astro Boy is like this in terms of complexity.
Okay,
and Crybaby to Devilman is kind of the same thing, where it sort of is the critical examination of Devilman.
Yeah.
Here's all the subtext that works. Here's all the subtext that doesn't work. Here are the queer themes actually expressed, like, as text instead of maybe subtext in one drawing.
Yeah.
So it's really fascinating to see this kind of old clunky comic that's really entertaining turn into sort of a really edgy, sexy, smarty art animation, you know?
I mean, there's other Devilman updates too, like Devilman Grimoire, and then like Seven Seas put them out. So it's fun to read them all together and see, you know, where the writer took the original material and expanded on it or took it in a different direction. Mm. You know, I mean, this is a very small example of it, right? Mm-hmm. Compared to what millions of people have been doing for years to Batman.
Also, I doubt there's a 100-page conversation in any of those other adaptations.
Yeah,
I
right.
just have a hunch.
First three episodes of Devilman Crybaby are just Ryo and Fudo talking to each other about like crazy stuff happens, but it's just like a nonstop conversation for 90 minutes. Yeah.
I will say, so final thoughts. My final thought is while I was reading, there were several moments where I was like, you know, we're reading this with Chip in mind. Like, is he going to like this or not? And there were several panels where I was like, Chip would like this. And the first was definitely the drugs panel where he's smoking the cigarette.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
At least you're right. Drugs.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh, this guy doesn't know how drugs work.
No.
Because he just pitches it away later. But even though, like, this is kind of a rocky read for me, I did enjoy it. But reading it for the purposes of friendship, I think, made it even more fun, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like 100%. Another angle I'm trying to appreciate it on. Yeah, Chip, let's get your final thoughts, then Christopher, then Deb.
Well, it's funny you say that, because like as I was reading, I was just like, oh, I can't wait to talk to the gang about this page or that page. It's that kind of book. Like, yeah, I'll never read it again. I will read the Hitler story again, but I won't read subsequent volumes, especially now that I know it's not necessarily in order.
Way to go, Chris.
Now that I know that it's curated for readability, I don't want to read it.
This author's just making things up. This is crazy.
But I genuinely did enjoy so much of it, both for good and bad reasons. I got to give it a 10 out of 10.
Nice. Christopher, how about you?
There you go.
In this, I think it's funny that reading a manga with literally no subtext, decided to pull all of the subtext of the manga reading experience into the episode rather than leaving it in the show notes where it belongs. That's pretty good. In that spirit, Verotic's most popular character was Satanica. And the design is just 100% ripped off of Siren from this book. Like the ears that are bat wings and stuff like that. And like the boobs out. That's a big deal. And then the hooves. But she's only got two hooves.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, total ripoff. And then I feel in my head canon on this, since we're getting real nerdy, Go Nagai's legal team writes a letter to Glenn Danzig and is like, so you ripped off one of my character designs and you're selling a comic book of it? What's going on? Like, cease and desist. And then Danzig's like, look, I will publish Devilman in English if you just let us get away with this. We are making so much money on nude Satanica variant covers right now. Google it, folks.
Is this true?
No, this is my headcanon. I can't prove it, but the timing matches up. And also, they started with, it's funny, they started the Devilman stories. I remember you sent me a couple panels of just like how hideously colored it was. And the first couple issues of Devilman are from the the later stories that we've got here, the like time travel, like falling through time, encountering weird people, swirly stuff, which I think is kind of amazing. But yeah, that's my headcanon. But like, yeah, he just ripped this character design off so hard and made so much money off of it. So good for you, Glenn Danzig in the 90s. And that's my final thought on Devilman. I watched the first episode of Crybaby and I was like, wow, this is bonkers. I'm never going back to this again. And then 3 years later, here we are on the podcast. So
yeah,
it's good. It's good stuff. And I kind of want to go watch Crybaby now, actually, because I like Yuasa's stuff a lot, the director. But
Crybaby's a real bad time, but I enjoyed every second.
Yeah, it sounds, it sounds perfect. So yeah, thanks for picking this one. This is a left field classic manga pick. You know what? I actually had two more things I wanted to say. But as I was getting to the end, really reminded me a lot of Drifting Classroom, and it reminded me a lot of Cat-Eyed Boy. Drifting Classroom and Cat-Eyed Boy are two manga by Kazuo Umezu, who's like the horror manga guy in Japan. Cat-Eyed Boy was a shonen horror series about a yokai that fights other yokai, basically, or fake yokai. He's on the team of the yokai, saving humans from Japanese demons. But like, just as weird and creepy as this, but not as over the top violent. And then Drifting Classroom is the book that I was like real close to picking for our classic manga span. I chose Nausicaa instead. We're reading it next time. It also was like, how is this a boys comic from the 70s? Like, how didn't everyone get like shouted down by PTAs fired and sued or cannon. Thrown in jail? You know what I mean? Like, it's just so weird and dark and kids just keep getting brutalized. Like, it's like, yeah, like the kids getting like the kid getting beheaded on that one page. And then you flip just before the turtle story in this one. I was just like, who was reading this in the 70s? Like, this is crazy. Anyway, long story short, this is in that fine tradition. So if you liked either Cat Eyed Boys weirdness or Drifting Classroom's weirdness,
I think you'd dig this a lot. I don't know.
I think Drifting Classroom ties everything. It has a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
Or this just kind of has an endless middle.
Yeah. Anyway, sins of the past. I'm just going to let it go. But what a read. Thanks, David.
Deb, what do you have for us? Take us home.
Well, I think one thing we didn't really mention is that the work that Go Nagai did before he did Devilman was an etchy gag manga called, like, what was it? Harenchi Classroom. Harenchi Gakuen, or Shameless School, where, like, the school where girls rip off their tops, and it's just kind of like boobs and gags, and, you know, guys with their, like, the blood spurting out of their nose. It's just, goofy sex comedy. And it was one of the early series in Shonen Jump that, when Shonen Jump launched, was like, hi, we're different than other shonen magazines. Let us show you how. And so Harenchi Gakuen was kind of like this, was such a over the top, just shameless, crazy manga that the PTA in Japan actually protested it.
Mm.
And it was considered a danger to society. But like all of these controversies, like, what, it basically sold more books. So when you got here is, you know, Go Nagai, who was also like, he was formerly an assistant to Shotaro Ishinomori, you know, so you got this guy who was doing these goofy gag manga about school. So that's why you see the bullies, right?
Mm-hmm.
The characterization. And I think I counted 26 pages of Maki in the bath, contemplating Akira seeing her naked, and then while a demon is menacing her from the mirror. It just went on and on and on. But so I guess I'm saying, like, from that background comes Devilman,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really, I wish I understood that period of manga a little bit more, because I remember being a kid and my uncle had seinen manga magazines, you know, in Japanese at my grandma's house. And I remember flipping to Tiger Mask, which is a famous wrestling manga. Mind you, I can't read much Japanese at that point. But I remember reading it and I'm like, this is crazy. This is so nuts. I love manga. This, you know, I mean, that and Candy, which was like a, you know, stupid melodramatic story about an orphan. But
it's about an orphan just like going from house to house getting brutalized by anyone who takes her in. Candy is crazy. Candy is crazy as Devilman is in a shoujo context, and I wish it was in print. Because everything I've read or seen of it is just like, what? What is happening to this? It's like, yeah, Anne of Green Gables cranked to 11. Like, it's awful. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's crazy. No. I'm just saying that, but this era of manga is just anything goes. Like, they were just doing whatever.
Yeah.
And there wasn't, like, it seemed like even the PTA protesting them didn't stop them. It feels like this is the moment when the manga publishing industry, combined with the baby boomers, right? Like, this is the baby boom, when the children of the baby boom, this is when they are at their peak comic buying period,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether they're tweens, teens, to college students, they're buying manga by the truckload. And so manga is very successful. And also manga decides to go do the equivalent of taking drugs at a hippie rave, which means anything goes. So when I remember, I read manga from that period, like I mentioned F, the Formula One racing one,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of similar era. Just like the hero tries to stop people from pursuing him by shitting out the back of the window.
It would probably work.
So the shit lands on his enemy's windshield. Yeah. Anyway, manga at that period is just nuts. And I still don't understand why, but it makes me think about, wow, we've really stopped ourselves in America from going that far.
Yeah.
Right? Like we've created these fences and borders and in which comic book entertainment cannot go past, cannot go into. And this kind of, I think what makes Devilman exciting is this is what happens when someone has no fences.
That is true.
And for that, it is exciting, and I'm glad to see it. It's not my favorite manga of all time, but
just second favorite.
You know, it's just like I was kind of said, like, you know, Tezuka is the god of manga. Mm-hmm. Shotaro Ishinomori is the king of manga. Go Nagai is the perverted uncle of manga.
Really not the devil of manga?
I leave that up to you.
You did remind me of one thing I wanted to say before we split for this episode, is that what was going on in America while Devilman was coming out. And if you know, like, say, Damon Hellstrom from Marvel Comics and Satana, mm-hmm. the Daughter of Satan, they debuted the year after Devilman.
Mm.
And feel like everything in Devilman is 100% more edgy than anything that's been done with Satana since, which is kind of wild to think about.
Yeah.
And wasn't this the same period when they had, like, all these kind of crazy horror movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
The Swamp Thing came a few years later.
Getting, like,
72, 73.
Yeah.
Like the satanic ritual type
Rosemary's Baby vibes.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a wild time, and for this to be for kids at that time, it's exciting as a former child. As an adult, I'm like, someone needs to do something about this.
But that's what manga does beautifully, right?
Yeah.
And like manga, like I've told this to many people, but comics for kids in America is too damn polite.
Mm. Yeah.
Too damn cute, too damn acceptable. Whereas manga, with Ranma getting splashed and gross boobs, you know, all these kinds, and the, you know, Sailor Moon is wearing a super short skirt and she is being silly. She's running with toast in her mouth, and like, just, it's kind of
running
crazy.
With toast in her mouth. Whoa, whoa, whoa! We need to stop this Sailor Moon nonsense immediately.
I mean, you know, and then like in Magic Knight Raider, there's a kind of a downer ending.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of things about manga that is unexpected and a little dangerous and a little bit subversive that makes it so much more entertaining for a teenager to read.
Yeah, for sure.
This, I'm sure, like, reading Devilman at the time probably had like that same kind of, you know, thrill of I'm reading something I'm not supposed to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Love it. All right, we're going to take...
Sorry, you know what? Before you say the final thoughts, there are two more things that I wanted to point out in this book.
Hit me.
I don't think we've given any acknowledgement to the short story with the little kid and the mom who was the demon.
Yeah.
Oh, and the dad. Yeah.
That was dark.
That was dark, but it was really good. It was like a really kind of a classic horror thing. And I think also based on the drawing style and now knowing how out of order this is, it probably came later on.
Nope.
But I thought it was like actually kind of a delightful kind of short horror thing with, you know, the punchline of the dad is the demon dog.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
I really like that. Also, I really need to point out, so it ends up in the show notes, my other favorite page, which is page 174. Please, class, flip to it right now.
No.
Let's see.
Christopher, did you not bring your book to class?
I got it.
Okay, good.
Oh, man.
It's for the listeners, it's our two main heroes before entering the precipice of hell, just clasping hands in that classic Schwarzenegger,
Carl Weathers
style, staring at each other and then manly tears dripping down their face. And it's so good. It's so good. That whole scene is just so good.
Yeah. I will say the manly tears is one thing. Like, I hate comparing like manga and Cape Comics directly, but superheroes need a lot more manly tears.
They do. I take that as a challenge, and I accept that challenge.
I mean, you're already writing Daredevil. It can't get much sadder.
It is true.
All right. We're going to take a break for some station identification, and then we'll be back with some Q&A.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. Hopefully that was an ad that made us a lot of money, because manga is not cheap with, you know, these unprecedented times and supply chain and everything.
And this was a hardcover too.
Yeah, this hardcover, 600 pages. I don't know what I was thinking.
There's no digital edition even. Poor Chip had to go to
a
store.
Yeah, I know. I did.
The wrist hurts now. Yep. Chris, you've got some Q&A for us, right?
I do. And thank you to everyone who keeps writing in with questions and answers. We're going to do some Q&A centric episodes a little later. Today's question comes from Karina Taylor via email. And their statement followed by a question is as follows. I've just about caught up through all the episodes of the podcast. This came in a little while ago. And now I'm really looking forward to hearing you talk about your first alt manga / small press comics in An Invitation from a Crab by Panpanya, which we covered earlier this season. Do you think you'll be able to make space in the podcast for more art manga or less highly commercial works, especially with the recent crop of English language small press manga publishers that have popped up in the last year, like Starfruit Books and Glacier Bay Books, which just won an Ignatz for its stellar Glalieolia manga anthology. North American readers suddenly have a chance to read works from authors they would probably never be able to without going to Comitia. I personally would love to hear you talk about these type of works. And by an alternate coin, do you think that you'll ever cover manhwa or webtoon style comics? How far does the term manga stretch for this podcast? That's a big question. But I've got answers, but I feel like I talked a lot this episode. So, Deb, you're our resident webtoon / manhwa expert, at least out of the four of us.
Which ain't saying much.
Deb, what do you think?
Well, I will say that I started reading more manhwa, you know, webtoons over the last maybe 2 months. I've read it off and on, but it's largely because there was an app called Manta, which offers an all you can eat manhwa, like webtoons that you can read rather than the way that it with Line or Tappytoon or Tapas, where you get three free and then you have to pay 300 coins or whatever the denomination that is to read the next chapter. So these microtransactions add up for basically melodrama. But I'm here for it because I need the escapism of I was a hardworking woman, office worker, who got transported to my favorite novel, and I am now the villainess, but I decided to rewrite the novel so that I actually get the cute guy in the end. Mm. It's trash, and I hate myself for it.
Wait, is that My Life as a Villainess?
Oh my god, there's so many variations.
Yeah,
of this
there's
shit.
One that's really good that I like called My Life as a Villainess. It has a subtitle that I should probably remember. But yeah, I'm sorry. Go for it.
Like all points point to chaos. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of this stuff. So I find a lot to admire about it because I think the storytelling is interesting, and I'm fascinated by how it hooks you in and keeps you clicking that spend more money to read another chapter. I appreciate it from a UX point of view. I appreciate it from a storytelling point of view. Am I an expert on manhwa to be able to talk about the history and the context? No. So I'm going to say that anyone who would like to go deeper into this, I say green fields are out there for you. Please start a podcast. I will be a devoted listener.
If you name it manhwa explaining, we get 50%.
Yeah, I think that's
at least.
There you go.
Because that shit ain't cheap.
And if you actually have a podcast already, let us know. I'll check out a couple episodes. We'll make it some of our shout outs 1 week or something like that. Because I think this week we don't even have anything to shout out. So yeah, let's recommend some stuff. David, you actually picked a book from one of the aforementioned small press manga publishers in the coming weeks, right?
Yeah. So this will probably going to drive Chris nuts a little bit, but like I barely even believe in genre. So pretty much anything goes for me on the podcast, as long as it's more or less from Japan in some way that I can like track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I read a lot of mostly there's probably a word for commercial manga that's not likely to sell, like midlist or lower type stuff. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like where my tastes tend to land, which I don't bring on the podcast very often because I know it's, you know, like a C plus for everyone else, but maybe like an A minus for me. But I love like alt comics and like indie works, weird art stuff, and I'd love to talk about it on the show. But the trouble is that it's often not quite as long as like more commercial stuff. Mm. Like the one we're doing, the one I chose is 16 pages, which will be an interesting conversation. And also interesting to see how long our conversation lasts. Mm. So I'm up for it, but I'm a big believer in only picking battles you know you can win. You know, yeah. So like Deb, like if I can't talk like freely about like the history and the culture and the context around it, I might not bring it on the show. But I would recommend it like as a reader or as like a shout out or something like that.
I just want to point out like, you know, reluctance to pick a thing that's really short. You just assigned us a 670 page hardcover.
I think if you average out Gundam the Origin, Devilman, and the Blood Red Boy, it's still too long.
Yeah, it's still 400 yeah. pages.
Is that like a... It's like a carbon offsetter, isn't it? Or something
yeah,
like
it's like an indulgence at this point.
David overcorrecting brothers.
Yeah, but I just love comic books. I'll read anything. But I think for the podcast, I do want to keep it just to, if you say manga, does it feel like manga, then it's probably going to be on the show. Mm. But like for manhwa or Chinese manhwa, you know, maybe not.
Between The Beguiling and TCAF, I spent 20, let's say 2 years specifically boosting alternative comics and art comics, working very hard just to do that.
And so he's done with it now.
No, it's more like this is the first thing that is critical in a public way I've done in a long time. And it's still like just four buds getting together, talking about comics, what we liked and what we didn't like. And luckily there's enough of a distance, like a remove for me anyway, because it's manga, that I don't feel bad about it.
Oh, but, crap.
Yeah, right? I'm sure we'll ruin that at some point by publishing some manga. But yeah, I think I stopped criticizing manga or criticizing books, especially from smaller publishers, not because they weren't worthy. I think that's still a worthy pursuit. But I think when I look at small press publishers, they just need all the help they can get. Like the odds are stacked against you. You know what I mean? In every category you could think of, other than occasionally artistic quality, like the odds are stacked against you making any kind of success with any kind of small press book. So if we were going to honestly talk about any book that came onto the podcast, then we'd run that risk of turning people off that had never heard of a book before. And that feels bad to me. Mm. I think manga being works that were already successful enough in their home country to get licensed means that anything that I say about a North American edition doesn't really matter one whit to the original creator. They've already had a successful book. And whatever I say is like water off a duck's back for the most part. I mean, you know, we do criticize translation sometimes or lettering or production or whatever. And those are people that are working.
Light novels.
Yeah. These are people like David right here who are working on it in North America. But I think it's a different thing personally. And, you know, this doesn't have to be about what I think, but I can say pretty specifically that I was a little anxious when David mentioned that he wanted to read a small press book, because it's like, oh man, am I going to have to lie? Or, oh man, am I going to have to tell the truth? And is that somehow worse? Or like whatever the deal is there. And we even sort of voted on it when we were doing that first round of Viz. Viz came on as a sponsor, which was really kind of them. And they wanted us to cover a North American manga, which is to say an original manga, Viz original. We kind of just decided not to do it. And it's just like, it's again, the odds are stacked against you in trying to make manga in North America, trying to make original work. No matter how good you are, the odds are stacked against you. Even with Viz's backing, there's still a loud group of folks out there screaming that it's not real manga and trying to not only not buying it, but trying to get other people to not buy it. That sucks. It feels shitty. I don't want to contribute to that. And I think we all kind of felt the same way along different, you know, different lines. So it's not to say that we won't cover small press books. Like I'm the one who picked Ponponya, and if like when the next one, The Vacation, comes out, I really would love to read that. I don't know if it'll be a good manga explaining read or not, but I would love to read it. It's just like, yeah, I think I personally want to cover books like that in shout outs. I want to be able to say, hey, I read this thing and it was really great. Not shout out the books that I read that weren't really great. You know what I mean? Hey, I read this independent book and it sucked. Please avoid. Like that's not cool. But I want to be able to like talk positively at stuff that needs the most help. And for stuff that doesn't need as much help, it's kind of like, you know, it doesn't matter as much, I guess, is what it comes down to. It doesn't matter as much to me. I'm still happy about books. I still want to boost them. You know what I mean? I am curious, though, Chip, what does manga mean to you now when in terms of this podcast? Like, how far do you want to stretch it? How far do you want to cover? I'm really curious.
What does manga mean to me?
You've read 45 books now. It's got to mean something.
I like it. I'm a fan.
Nice. We won.
Yeah, no, I think the more we can expand into different types of manga, the happier I'll be. Because every once in a while, we'll like it kind of happened with Golden Kamuy and Vinland Saga, where it was like, okay, this is kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. I would love some more smut.
Can do.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I'm interested in all of it. Like, I think the earlier episodes, thinking Paradise Kiss, stuff like that, especially like where it really felt stylistically different.
Mm.
I quite appreciate those kind of deviations from some of the other kind of more kind of mainstream styles that we've had on the show. But also, it's hard for me to even like picture these as being indie or not, because I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, oh, this could have sold like 100 million copies.
Yeah.
Invitation from a Crab, maybe 90 million copies, but you know what I mean.
Like, this art is clean, so it's probably mainstream.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I kind of have the opposite problem from Chris, where, like, you don't want to talk about things. You don't want to actually accidentally bring something down that needs to leg up. But, like, I love talking about books that I don't like, but in such detail that people think that I like them.
Mm.
Because, like, I hate not knowing things. And if there's, like, a little kernel of something, I can figure it out. Like, I'll stick with it and end up spending like $60 on a series I'm not even that into, just to see where it goes.
Yeah. Know?
Yeah.
So like Devil Man Volume 2.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Chip's Joker's Metal.
Oh, man. This was a good episode, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we could have honestly talked about Devil Man for another hour, because there's just so much crazy shit in it.
I think because there's no subtext, like, it gives, there's just so much texture to grab onto.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was just going to go through and be like, and this drawing of Devilman kicks ass, and this drawing of Devilman kicks ass. And
there's a rocket punch
pages, but like, oh yeah, yeah. Like, oh, so good.
So I discovered something when I was talking with David about this earlier, but
yeah,
Go Nagai did like an autobio manga about what it was like to draw these manga at the time.
Whoa.
He did it. It's called Gekimon. So there's a Gekimon just about the time when he drew Devilman. Yeah. There's a several volumes of Gekimon when he drew Mazinger Z. And so he draws himself as a younger man and what he was going through when he was creating these works. So
maybe a breakup?
He was mid to late 20s.
Oh, I was just happily married at this time.
I mean, I met Go Nagai at Anime Expo in 2018. He is the sweetest, nicest man, who kind of like, you if you look at him, think there's something evil in the back of that smile, but I'm gonna just let that roll. And Mrs. Nagai, very pretty, very elegant. I have no idea what she thinks of.
Strangely, she has wings on the side of her head.
That, yeah.
But with that, we're gonna call it a week, and we will see you next week for more manga splaining. This has been Manga Splaining, episode 45. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, we'll be reading Nausicaa, Volume 1, by Hayao Miyazaki. Please consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop. Find one near you at comicshoplocator.com, or check out your local library for print, or maybe digital lending options. I'm pretty sure this one's print only as well. We'll see. You can also follow along with our complete reading list at mangasplaining.com. Thanks to DADS for the musical accompaniment this episode.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.